listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
And guess what I saw today on the way over from Mount Pleasant?
Let me guess. An eagle?
A bald eagle.
Bald eagle.
Yeah. He's flying over the Mississippi there, or Mississippi, over the Skunk.
The Skunk River, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I just pulled off the side of the road and watched him.
There was a long period of time where we never saw eagles.
I know.
And now they are.
They were
back.
Endangered.
They were endangered, and now they're
coming back. Oh, gosh. I just loved them. They're so beautiful.
But that kind of makes up for your lack of other birds.
I don't have any birds in my yard. I have 4 feeders and no birds. Understand it.
Maybe it's because they are able to eat elsewhere.
Because there's no snow cover.
Because there's no snow cover.
That could be. Yeah. It could be. I hope so.
So what have
you been? Hope they haven't boycotted me for good.
So what have you been reading, Mom?
I'm reading. Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't read anything for this week because we didn't have anything to read.
That's right, because we have a guest that we're going to talk about probably a number of books. We have.
Yes.
Do you want to introduce our guest today?
Okay, it's Molly
Briette.
Okay. Yes. And as a child in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., she spent most of her time reading anything she could get her hands on. Sounds like Monica. from age-appropriate choices like The Babysitter's Club to books pilfered from her parents' bookshelf. She was the only kid in her fourth grade class who'd attempted Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Okay, she must have really liked to read. Her love for reading only grew stronger throughout high school and college, and she was never quite sure how to turn that into passion and into a career. Then, after a journalism professor at Towson University suggested she attend NYU Summer Publishing Institute after graduation, she packed her bags and moved to Manhattan. While at SPI, she learned the ins and outs of the publishing business and interviewed successfully for a publicity assistant position at Penguin's Avery imprint. And there's more, but let's let her tell some of the story.
Welcome to Writer's Voices, Molly.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And Molly very kindly offered to fill in at the last minute when we had a miscommunication a few weeks ago, but we weren't able to get it on in time, and so I said, but that's perfect. We'd love to talk to a publicist for Torture Penguin.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yes, tell us how you made it to Torture Penguin, Molly.
Well, I had worked on some similar books while at a different company out in San Francisco. So when I had moved back to New York, this seemed like the type of books that I wanted to work on. You know, I enjoy working on nonfiction, and I enjoy working on books that I feel are going to be of some benefit to the people reading them, and that very much fits in with the books that Tarcher publishes.
What kind of books do they publish?
It kind of falls under the mind-body-spirit headline, which really encompasses anything from cookbooks to relationship books to spiritual guidance to kind of all over the map, really. Parenting guides, fitness books, a lot of self-improvement.
This is a pretty hot area in publishing, wouldn't you say? Would you say that this is Would you say this is a leading area in publishing, a hot area, the mind, body, spirit?
Did I lose you for a second?
Yeah, I think so.
We could hear you. Can you hear us? Uh-oh.
Apparently okay. Not.
All right. Can you hear us now?
Hi, yes.
Oh, okay. Somehow we accidentally muted you.
Oh, no. I was thinking, wow, they must be really unimpressed by this.
Oh, no.
No. So what I'd asked about the mind-body-spirit area, is this kind of a hot area in publishing?
It is. It's rapidly growing. I think that people are always looking for some way to improve their lives, whether it's the mind, body, or the spirit. So mm-hmm. I think it's something that is perennially successful and something that will continue to grow.
Now, I have to, when Mom said that it sounded like your intro sounded like me, about reading everything I could get my hands on, and it's interesting that you say in fourth grade you attempted Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I remember fourth grade being a year where I read a book, and I'm not sure, it might have been The Red Badge of Courage.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Or else it was The Red Pony. It was The Red something. And I remember being really kind of being a turning point for me because it was something I couldn't really understand, but I really wanted to.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt too. And I have to admit, I didn't make it all the way through. I was attracted because of the pink cover, but probably got about four chapters in and gave up.
Ah, okay. Okay. Did you ever go back to it?
No, and actually, I think I should.
You probably should.
Yes, you really should.
It's definitely a different perspective at this point.
Now, you went into the publishing business in the publicity area. Why that part of the publishing business as opposed to the editorial side?
Well, I was really hoping for something where I could utilize both my talent for writing, but also be able to do more communicating and just something a little bit more social. So much of my job is spent on the phone with, you know, producers like you guys or editors trying to talk about books. And so that, I guess, verbal aspect of it or that communications aspect really drew me to this part of it.
So tell us a little bit about what a publicist actually does.
Well, it's much less exciting than a lot of people think. We spend a lot of time figuring out who we should be trying to pitch the books to. The main goal is, of course, for the book to get covered, whether that means the author goes on a radio show or on a TV show or to get reviews lined up in newspapers and magazines, and as well as events like book signings and things like that. So a big part of it is just figuring out who the right people are to be getting in touch with and who's interested in what. So I spend a lot of time just reading and trying to get a feel for different outlets and what I should be pitching to them. I spend a lot of time sending emails or a lot of time on the phone and a lot of time getting rejected.
Oh.
like authors, right?
Which is tough.
Yeah.
Take it with a smile.
Yeah, I guess you. Well, it may, and also it might be easier not to take personally because it's not your book that is getting rejected. You didn't.
Right.
Yeah. It'd be a little harder. So it might be harder for someone to be trying to publicize themselves.
I think so. I think that self-published authors definitely face a big hurdle in that it's hard to separate yourself a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So how many books are you working with at any given time?
It's kind of tricky, but I usually have about 3 to 5 active books, which means that they're really in the crux of the campaign. But I'm also always actively promoting some of the older books. We don't just completely give up on them mm-hmm. after a certain point. And looking forward and kind of reaching out to long lead publications for books that are coming out, say, later in the year.
So maybe you can describe kind of how the publishing schedule works at a company like Tarcher. You know, when a book's acquired, you know, what's the timeline between that and publishing, and is there seasonality involved? And
there's a lot
like
of
that.
Seasonality involved, and probably most people don't think about how much goes into the decision as to when a book will go on sale, but you'll start to notice that a lot more diet books and a lot more just general improvement type books come out around late December, early January, and that's to tie in with people's New Year's resolutions.
Oh, yes.
A lot more fiction comes out toward the early summer because a lot of times it'll be geared to be a beach read or something along those lines. So it's something that's really, really well thought out, but not on my end. I don't really do with that. I don't see books until they're pretty close to completion. Occasionally I'll see something very early, but usually, you know, I don't have much input into the editorial process or to the acquisition process.
So the editors, they don't come in to you and say, you know, do you think you could be successful publicizing this book?
Occasionally we'll get that, but not for every title.
Mm. Do you feel like that it would behoove them to solicit your input more often?
I think that possibly, yes. I mean, you know, our editors have great instincts, so I think they kind of know, based on what's worked and what hasn't worked in the past. So there hasn't been very many cases where something is just completely unpublicizable, you know, and I think they know what they're doing, so it's not usually an issue.
Right.
They have to keep their finger on the pulse of the movement of the culture.
Right, which is just rapidly, rapidly moving.
Yeah, right.
So a book is acquired sometimes, I'm assuming, especially in nonfiction, in your realm, a lot of times the book may not even be written at the time it's acquired.
Right, very much of the time that's the case. I'd say maybe 75%.
Okay. And so then there's the time, you know, the deadline for completion of the manuscript, which, do you have any idea how long they would give a writer to finish something? Or does it, is it
there are usually strict deadlines, and very frequently those deadlines are not adhered to, but I know what they are. So I don't know, you might want to have another show with an editor, because that process is somewhat unknown to me.
Okay. So by the time, so then it has a publishing date, and you get involved how far in advance of the publishing date?
Usually about 6 months out. Okay. The way that magazines work is they are working as far ahead as 6 to 8 months out a lot of the times, these monthly magazines. So, for example, a lot of them right now in freezing February are working on, you know, hot summer issues.
Right.
We really need to get materials to them as soon as possible. So we like to have something to be able to send about 6 months out.
Okay. And so kind of walk me through. You have a new book that's going to be published in 6 months. What's the first thing you do?
Well, the very first thing I do is just to read it and take a million notes, and I usually have just tons and tons of post-it notes sticking in there with ideas for ways that I can pitch different parts of it. Once I've read it, I'll start to make a list of people that I think would be interested, and then I'll send them what we call a galley, which is an uncorrected manuscript that we've kind of bound together so that it looks like a book, but mm-hmm. it contains errors and is not quite the finished product. And so we'll send that out to anyone who needs it farther than a month or so in advance and get that out and just kind of start, once those are out the door and people have had time to read them, just start calling them to follow up and see if they want to write about it, or trying to convince them to write about it, I should say.
Now, are you given priorities among the books that are signed to you and told, you know, we want more attention on this one than that one, or not?
No, we're not assigned priorities, but sometimes when something is picking up a lot of steam and something else might not be, there comes the time when you have to decide, well, do I want to devote more of my time to trying to get this book that's not having much success out there, or do I want to capitalize on the success that this other book is having and try to focus on that? And usually I end up going with the latter and going with the one that's getting the attention.
Right.
If things can be built from that.
So does every book that Tartar Penguin publishes get assigned to a publicist?
It does. And at the beginning of every season, right when the books have been assigned, we all get to submit to our director, you know, what we think we would be best working with, and it's usually those do get assigned to us. There are very few conflicts.
Everybody has their own favorites.
Yes.
Favorite areas. And so what are your kind of specialties?
My specialties, I prefer the more strict nonfiction to the more, I guess, spiritually oriented titles, which can be like a little bit vague, I guess. I prefer nice meaty books that have a lot of facts that I can pull from, and books that, you know, I think books that I think that will be really beneficial to the reader.
Right.
I think all of them will, but I you know, we do a lot of kind of more new agey type books, and that is less up my alley than, say, a cookbook or a relationship advice book.
I know you've handled the Now Write series.
Yes, and which you guys have been great supporters of.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed those books. And does Tartar do a lot of writing, books about writing?
We do. Julia Cameron is one of our big authors.
Of course.
She is kind of a guru in that field, and we love her, and she has just released a new book with us called The Prosperous Heart, which is so far very successful. And she's kind of one of our old standby authors that we enjoy having working with very frequently.
We'd love to interview her.
Yeah, I will in touch about setting
great.
That up. I'm not handling her campaigns, actually. But
okay.
You send me an email about
that. I will.
That's I think great. We could arrange it.
Cool. Yeah, I'm always tickled when I get books from Tarcher and from and some other Penguin imprints, because a lot of times they come out of the blue. You know, I don't know they're coming, and then they show up on my door or in my mail with a nice letter and so forth, and they're always really great books, so I'm always really tickled to get those.
Makes our job easier when we have people send us books, and then right. we can...
right, whereas some other people, a lot of people contact by email and ask, they basically don't send the book until I say, yes, we're willing to have them on the show, which doesn't always work out that well, because sometimes you get it and it's not what you think it was. So I appreciate that you're willing to do that, to send the book in advance.
Well, I think there's only so much that can be discerned via email, and I think that, you know, having that book in your hand and getting to actually read it and connect with it is important.
Absolutely.
I'm a great believer of that.
So you get the books, you get involved about 6 months in advance of the publishing date, you start working on it. Do you, in terms of interviews, you probably, I'm guessing that you try and schedule those for after the book's actually available?
Yes, as much as possible, we prefer to do that. You know, we have gotten a little bit more flexible about it now that Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and the other online retailers have the pre-order button, which makes pre-ordering a little bit easier. So we've been able to loosen up a little bit on the strictness of adhering to those pub dates. But we do still prefer for it to be after the book is on sale.
Right. And now, of course, print interviews have to be done far in advance.
Right. Particularly for magazines. For newspapers, the turnaround time is much faster, and you can occasionally get a call from, you know, the Washington Post, and they need someone for the next day, and that'll have to happen very fast.
Wow.
Those are always a little bit intense, because you're trying to get the author, and then the author's not answering their phone, and you're thinking, oh, we have to get this, we have to strike while the iron's hot, and it can be a little bit tense, but it's always very exciting, so it usually is worthwhile.
And when you get those kind of requests, are they requesting a specific author, or they're like, give me somebody, we need to fill the space?
Well, usually you get both. And there are several different email lists. There's something called Help a Reporter Out, where reporters will say they need an expert on vegetarianism. They will then contact this list and get added to this email that gets sent out every day to tons of publicists saying, so-and-so is looking for a vegetarian expert to come in, and then you can pitch directly. So that's really helpful to us, too.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so how, like, if someone were trying to... you know, not everyone's fortunate enough to get a major publishing contract.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of small publishers and or self-publishing. Can they use that list too, do you think?
I believe so. I think that it's free. And I'm not sure, but it's called Help a Reporter Out, and they're a really great organization. So I would recommend them to anyone that is interested, not just for books, but for, you know, any
right.
kind of PR promotion.
Right. That sounds really fun.
Official on both sides of the equation.
How has the internet changed your job, or have you not been doing it long enough to really have
well,
know
the internet
before?
Has been around since I started, but it's definitely evolved in such a way. Even just the face of media, it used to be the case that if, for example, the New York Times was going to write a piece about your book, the big thing was to have it in the print edition, and if it got something on the website, that was okay, but, you know, the emphasis was getting it on the print, and now that's completely switched, and we want to focus on the online much more so, because so many more people have access to the website.
Oh, interesting.
One aspect, and just the social media, and trying to find that social media presence, which is something that we're still, you know, working on, has been a big change.
Well, is that part of your job also, is the kind of online promotion of these books?
It is, because some departments have their own people, but we're kind of a smaller one, so we handle the online as well as the traditional publicity. And we have a Twitter account, Tartar Books, and so, you know, it's trying to find ways to utilize that so that we're actively engaging with the audience as opposed to just telling them about our books.
How do you do
that? That's been interesting,
yeah.
At least.
How do you do that?
We've been trying to start more dialogues and tie into events in the news, or, you know, even things like crazy weather patterns, and trying to ask people what they feel about it and get a conversation going so that then we get, you know, promoted via all of these people's feeds. And, you know, offering more giveaways and trying to do contests. And it's a work in progress for sure, but something we're really actively trying to figure out.
Okay, and what about Facebook? Do you put a Facebook page up for every book?
We don't put a specific page up for every book, although many authors will do that themselves. But we do have both a Penguin Facebook page and a Tartar Facebook page in which we promote the books, and we'll post links to interviews, and we'll post links to just relevant material, and so we'll try to promote it via that. But I don't think we have the resources to do one actual page for every single book. I wish we did.
Yeah, it's that whole area is something that I'm slowly learning more about, but I'm not quite sure yet about it. You know, about how to really use Facebook and or Twitter really to promote a book.
Well, it just changes so fast that, you know, everything is so different from one day to the next that it's hard to keep up with sometimes.
That is true. That is true. Now, the more traditional media, you've got radio, television, newspaper, magazine. Am I missing any? Are those the...
And then blogs and things like that, which blogs. I think actually now do fall into that category more so.
Oh, really? Okay.
A lot of the blogs function as a newspaper, just one that you have at your fingertips. So I almost group them in, you know, places like the Huffington Post and Gawker.
Right, right.
I would group them more in with traditional media than I would with the social media.
Now, is there, you know, how do you decide, like, which of those areas to pursue for a given book?
For almost every book, we try to pursue all of them to the fullest extent possible. The exception being if we have an author who does not live in America, it's much harder to pursue TV and radio. Mm. And then we focus on the print and online coverage. But
right.
Assuming that the author is in America, we try to go across the board and get as much as possible.
Okay, answer this. Do you get many foreign authors?
We get... from time to time, the primarily Americans, but once in a while we'll have someone that lives out of the country.
I'm just wondering how many books, there's so many books published in the United States, I'm wondering how many books are published internationally, you know?
It's probably a very staggering number.
Must be, yeah.
I don't know, but I can't remember what the statistics are and how many books per year are published in the States, but when you think about it, it actually is a little bit overwhelming doing my job, because I'm thinking I'm competing with all of these other books.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely is an interesting perspective, Chef.
I know, and as a reader, it's so hard to... There's so many good books out there, so many things that draw your attention, and it's hard mm-hmm. to decide what to spend your time on. I mean, I could spend all day every day reading and never get
right.
to everything.
I agree completely. Someday, I hope that's my life.
You know, I used to have this fantasy years ago, many, many years ago, that I would have, when I had children, you know, I'd take them to the park and I'd sit and read while they played, and I'd get to read all the time. I did have children. That did not happen.
It didn't work out that way.
I think somehow somebody told me that might not be.
No, did not work that way. And now I have a grandson, too, and reading when he's around is not really a possibility.
Oh, I bet. How old is he?
He's two. And the thing is, though, that it just amazes me how a two-year-old has this huge affinity for computers, smartphones, iPad, I have an Amazon Kindle Fire, and he'll just grab that thing and start playing games on it. 2 years old.
Amazing. Have you seen that video of the baby? And it's a baby, I want to say she's about a year old, and someone hands her a magazine, just a traditional print magazine, and you see her pressing it as if it's an iPad or sort of a Kindle device. She's getting so frustrated because nothing's happening when she presses it.
This picture is not changing.
Funny and kind of sad in a way.
He had
no idea what to do with this thing.
I know. He's used to these like interactive books on the smartphones, or and his mom has an iPad, and you know, it's you push a picture in the book and it will do something. It'll move or something like that. And if he gets to one where it doesn't, like he pushes something and it doesn't do anything, it really makes him mad. He's like,
funny how used to it they become.
Absolutely. But he's also really loves traditional books, and he definitely knows the difference between the two. He doesn't expect the book to do the same thing that the computer screen does.
Right. Yeah, I think that as technology evolves, I think that there will definitely still be a place for having those physical books. I just think there's really nothing like it.
I think so, too. Now, you know, since having a two-year-old grandson now, I'm learning about interactive children's books, and that's something that adult books haven't really gone that direction yet, but I'm thinking that that's the next thing.
It is. The term that we use in the industry is called enhanced e-books, and it's something that is really evolving a lot right now, and we're trying to figure out what kind of content people are going to want and ways we can do it that don't detract from the reading experience but rather add to it. So expect to see a lot more of that and hear that term, enhanced e-book, quite a bit in the coming months.
I bet. I mean, just in very simply, you know, we talk about blogs and so forth. We're on a blog, you're reading along, and there'll be a link to some further additional information about something that, you know, maybe isn't really completely relevant to the topic, but is ancillary to it. I would expect that ebooks would be doing that if they aren't already.
They have started doing that, and I think that it's going to increase a lot. I think it's evolving, and I don't know quite how that's happening, but I know that people are concerned that, you know, some people may not necessarily want those links or those additional photos or additional content. So I think that there will definitely be a functionality that allows that to be optional, or possibly people can specifically purchase the enhanced version, but I'm not 100% sure how that's all going to play out, but definitely something that's on people's minds.
Now, are they also looking at taking physical books and putting those things where you scan something, like you with your smartphone?
The QR code.
Yeah.
Yes, we've actually started doing that. We have a book coming out in the spring that will be actually in about a month, called the Book Club Cookbook, that we're using that on. And so... Or we're using that not on the physical book, but in the press materials, so that it's a book of recipes that are designed to go along with book club meetings with the specific books that are selected.
Oh, cool.
And so we're going to put on our press release a QR code that people can then scan, and then they will get additional recipes or like tidbits about these various books that didn't quite make it in. So we're also trying to figure out ways that we can make that work for us.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and I apologize for, I've got so wrapped up in the conversation that I forgot to remind our listeners whom we're speaking with today. This is Molly Briette from Tarcher Penguin. She's a publicist there. She's been there for how long?
I've been at this role for about a year and a half.
Okay. And before that, you were at Avery?
I started at Avery, and then had a quick jaunt out to the West Coast and was at Harper One in San Francisco, and now have returned.
All right. And so you're in New York now?
Yes.
New York, San Francisco.
Yeah.
So
like
what,
the big cities.
Yeah, what brought you back to New York?
It was both related to my boyfriend's job search.
Oh, okay.
Awesome.
Kidding.
Well, It sounds like
in the good bagels too.
Yeah, sounds like in your job you have a lot of projects that are a work in progress, and it's always going to be changing because of the internet, isn't it?
Yes, and it's a little bit scary, but also kind of fun to, you know, be somewhere where nothing is ever really the same for any two projects.
Uh huh.
So the, you know, there's a lot of talk about how publishing is changing and how traditional publishers are maybe losing their place. What do you see for the future of mainstream publishing?
Well, you know, I think that an interesting comparison was recently put out there between Kodak, which just filed for bankruptcy after having failed to fully embrace digital cameras and digital photography, and for clinging too much to kind of traditional print film. And so I think we're all kind of using that as a model of what not to do. And so, you know, focus on definitely the bread and butter, which are the print books, but also to make sure that we are evolving with technology and with just the culture at large. And figuring out how to do that is the hard part. But I think that at least giving it that attention, it sets us, you know, puts us in a good place.
Right, right. You're not dragging your heels.
No, definitely not. It's something that's constantly on our minds and constantly talked about. And some things work, some things don't. But we're out there trying, and we're trying to get as much feedback on our various endeavors as possible.
Now, we've interviewed a lot of authors. We've been doing this for over 5 years. And so we're, you know, one a week. So we're up over, you know, over a couple hundred. And probably evenly split between self-published and or they weren't all book authors. Some of them, you know, are journalists or magazine or short story. But of the book authors, probably evenly split between people who had who published with mainstream, you know, traditional large publishers and those that either self-published or with small publishing firms. And the, you know, there's advantages, of course, to going in there's advantages in both.
Right.
But the thing, one thing that I've heard over and over again is that regardless of whether you're self-published or with a major house, the author has to be prepared to really do a lot of publicity themselves.
Yes, very much agreed. And certainly more so when, you know, you're self-published and often don't have any publicity team unless you've hired someone. But this is something that's actually really increased in the time that I've been working in publicity. When I first started, it was primarily interviews and then people just writing about the book in the context of reviews and things like that. So with the exception of being interviewed for radio, TV, or for these prints, publications, the authors didn't have to do all that much. Now, because all of these blogs are so hungry for content, we're having to ask our authors to, you know, write guest blogs and to do a lot of additional writing around the time of publication in order to get content out there that then these blogs and things like that will promote. A lot now, instead of us saying a good idea for a story would be for you to write about male behavior in relationships, and then they assign one of their writers to it, then they, now they kind of come back to us and say, okay, great, can your author write us something about that? A lot of times I feel like I'm a teacher, like assigning homework. Like, okay, I'm going to need that by Friday. And I feel a little bit guilty because they already have done so much work.
But it's in their best interest, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, to
right.
get to get the
usually
book out
they're
there.
Pretty good about being willing to do so.
How important is it, and how much consideration is it given in the acquisition process that you have an author who is comfortable speaking in public?
It's pretty important. It's not the be-all, end-all, and certainly there are great books written by people who, you know, are not super comfortable talking in public, but it is something particularly for a lot of nonfiction books, because those authors tend to get more media exposure. It's something that we consider.
Right.
But it's definitely, if the quality of the book transcends poor camera ability, then we'll go for it. But we do always prefer that someone feels comfortable.
Do you have suggestions for authors to help them improve? Or if you're working with an author who maybe is a little awkward, do you ever coach them to get it to improve their skills in that area?
Typically, if we're going to do that, there are companies that do it that we will then outsource and pay for the author to be media trained. If we have a really kind of a budget issue, we'll try to do it ourselves, but we're not experts on that. A lot of times we're kind of awkward ourselves. So we usually will
not
pay
you.
Someone else to do it.
Well, you know, some people have never had an opportunity to speak in public.
Right.
And so it is something that's scary for them.
It's terrifying for many people. And I think they say that that's the biggest fear, right?
Right.
The most common major fear before heights and before spiders and anything else is fear of speaking in public.
Right, right.
And I think, you know, it makes sense. It can be very scary. I was nervous before calling in today. I am a little bit.
Well, you're doing great. You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest is Molly Briette, who is a publicist at Tarcher Penguin and is with us from New York today, calling in from New York. And just a little more on this area of what it takes for a nonfiction writer to break through all the huge number of books that are being published and to get attention to their book and even to get a publishing contract. I hear a lot these days about the writer needing to have a platform. Can you address that a little for us?
Yes, and that's definitely a big buzzword in the industry. Basically, what a platform is we prefer, it's not a rule, but we do prefer that an author has some sort of visibility prior to us signing them on, and that can be anything from them having done speaking events and, you know, been featured for on TV for their projects that they have then written a book about. But it can also be as much as just having a large Twitter following or having a lot of Facebook fans or having a lot of subscribers to one's blog. But we just want someone that already has a network of people that are familiar with them and that they can kind of network with once the book is close to on sale.
Would you recommend that would-be authors work on developing that as they're writing their book?
Absolutely. The more awareness that someone can get before they start pitching it to the publishing house, the better.
We had a young man a few years ago, The Farfield Curse was the name of the book, I think. It was a fiction, kind of a young adult fantasy thing. And he had built up this whole group of people waiting for the book to be published using the internet. Of course, he was like 17 years old or something. And as we talked about, these young people are real, it comes more naturally to them. Possibly,
right.
But, you know, so he was able to get a major publishing contract for a fiction book right out of the gate because he had built up that
following, as it were. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic, and that's absolutely, I think it's very valuable. We had a first-time author who was one of the first books that I worked with on Tarcher, named Howard Falco, author of I Am, The Power of Discovering Who You Really Are, which highly recommended, but he had never written before. He really hadn't been that much involved in this motivational world. He was actually a stockbroker before writing this book. Because he had amassed such a wide social media following, we signed him on, and I think that it was incredibly beneficial to the publishing process.
I bet.
Of course, once again,
people talking, and it's kind of the ripple effect. Which we're always going for, you know. You're talking about it and then tell it someone else and tell someone else, et cetera.
Well, that Facebook can certainly help that situation, I would think.
Yes. you know. Definitely.
You look at, oh gosh, I forget what it was. Somebody drove somebody out of business because they got on Facebook and just got all these people to boycott this particular thing. I forget what it was. So much goes on now that you just can't keep up with it all.
No, definitely not. And things become sensations so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly rapid.
The young man I was referring to was Caleb Nation, and the title of the book was Bron Hombrick, B-R-A-N. And anyone who wants to listen to how he developed, how he built that following, the interviews available on writersvoices.com, as this one will be for anyone who misses it live.
Yeah, or misses the first part of it or whatever.
Right. Or realizes that the information is so valuable they need to listen again.
Right.
That's writersvoices.com.
Of course, it is rebroadcast on Monday morning as well.
Right, at 8 a.m. So, Molly, you've had a number of adventures as a publicist, including doing facial yoga on Good Morning America. How did that come about, and what exactly is facial yoga?
Well, facial yoga was based on a book that I worked on when I was with the Avery imprint called The Yoga Face. And basically, the idea is that if you do these facial exercises, it will prevent signs of aging. And the author was a yoga instructor at a New York City gym, and so she would actually teach these classes where her clients would come in and they would do traditional yoga, but they would also do these crazy-looking facial moves and attempt to ward off the effects of time. So,
does it work?
I didn't really stick with it, but I have considered trying it again. But I think so. I mean, the author is gorgeous and very healthy looking and has a lovely face, so I think she's a good testimonial.
And how did you get to be the one doing it on Good Morning America?
Well, I was not the only one. I was in a class of people, but unfortunately I was in the front row. And so they decided to come in and film one of her classes, but it was a little bit sparse that day. So they wanted to fill it out, so they asked me to join the class.
You were conscripted.
And go sit in the front row. And somewhere in the archives that footage exists. But I would like to destroy it.
yeah, I can imagine. Are they things like jutting out your chin
like you sticking out your tongue and just kind of manipulating your face in various ways to combat various issues?
Well, if it works, it's preferable to spending lots and lots of money on creams and so forth, wouldn't you say?
Or plastic surgery.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, that was one of
Botox.
The big hooks, is stop spending all this money. Sit in front of your mirror for a while.
I got lucky because I have, if you look at my mother, you can tell, she doesn't even have that many wrinkles at well into her 70s, so
we come by it naturally because my mother and my grandmothers were the same.
Yeah.
So it's in our genes.
Oh, nice. That is very lucky.
Yeah,
I like to think the same. I think I like to look forward at my mom and think that.
And also like I think not smoking and aversion to the sun also helps.
And drinking a lot of water, I think.
Uh-huh.
Right. Oh, yeah. Those are key. I started wearing a hat out whenever I'm outdoors probably about 10 years ago, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Keeping out of the sun. So what about some of these other adventures, like hand modeling?
Well, this one was for a book that it was a dating book that came out this past fall, and we wanted to feature a hand on the cover holding an iPhone within the book's title as if it was a text on an iPhone, looked through all of these different stock images for hands, and none of the hands looked feminine enough, so they asked me to kind of get a nice manicure and as the hand model. So it actually was, more of an ordeal than I thought it would be, because it would be things like, okay, don't move your thumb 2 inches to the right, and I'd be like, my hand is killing me.
Oh.
Now my hand is immortalized forever on this book cover.
And at least you got a nice manicure out of the deal.
Yes, definitely.
That's good.
That was good, but it was. It makes me now have more sympathy for actual hand models.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I never thought about that, but of course, some of them would be unnatural position, perhaps that you know.
Yeah. Or just the fact that you have to hold so still for so long.
Right.
Yeah. What are some of the other unusual things that you've been called upon to do as a publicist?
Well, I was once working on a book about losing baby weight way back when I first started, and I'm not even sure. I missed the first part of the conversation, but I was at an event at a bookstore. Actually, not at a bookstore, but at a Destination Maternity, which is a maternity clothes store. And the author, unbeknownst to me, had started saying that I had had a baby 3 months earlier, and that, like, it, implying that it had been really successful on me, but I hadn't, and ended up having to go along with this whole wacky story that I felt a little bit uncomfortable with, but then all of these women just kept coming up and saying, oh, you look great, I can't believe you just had a baby. I didn't have a baby. I didn't really get away with it without totally blowing my cover because they were asking me questions about what's his name.
Oh, no.
A little bit guilty.
All things to tell about people, that is an interesting one, isn't it?
I don't know why she told it. I think it was just like a brilliant idea that she just had, but it was put me on the spot a little bit.
That's crossing the line a little bit.
I would say
And
you know, if an author is booked on a national TV show or really any TV show that's filmed in New York, we typically accompany them. So it's kind of interesting just to be able to sit backstage in their green rooms and witness the behind the scenes goings on there.
So have you met some high profile TV personalities that way?
Infrequent that I actually meet the hosts, but occasionally they will be celebrities backstage in the green room where I'm waiting with the authors that I will then encounter, and these include people like Hulk Hogan and Patti LaBelle.
Oh, cool.
So I'm usually too intimidated to really talk to them.
I can't already believe that.
Usually I get them to sit there quietly.
Oh. What are some of the other things that you do for your authors? You say you accompany them to the interviews. Are there any other things like that that really make them feel taken care of?
Well, many of the authors, you know, we just develop, we're working together and we're in such frequent contact that we become almost friends. I mean, it's certainly a professional relationship, but there are some who then I will just attend other events supporting other endeavors that they do. Mm. And definitely it's a lot of accompanying to TV shows, but also to book signings. Anything in the New York area, I try to go to.
Wow.
So, you know, I end up spending quite a bit of time with them, especially if they're local.
Now, there's a very large Barnes & Noble in New York, isn't there, that does huge readings?
Yes, the Union Square Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many of, you know, what percentage of your authors are you able to book there?
That actually is a very interesting question because I'm in the process of trying to get them to do someone. but, you know, that's typically celebrity and very, very high profile authors at that particular location.
Right, right.
And so we'd love to get as many people there as possible because it's so highly trafficked and it's just such a great space. But for for lesser known authors, typically we end up at other locations within the city.
Right. Are there some really other across the country, some real hot spots for live book tours, places that really draw good audiences and that you really like to send your writers?
There are. You know, the Tattered Cover in Denver is wonderful, and nearby that, the Boulder Bookstore is also really wonderful in Boulder, Colorado. Changing Hands in Phoenix, Arizona is great, and the East West Bookstore in the Bay Area is also a big one. There are so many, and I love all the independents so much that when I moved back to New York from California, my boyfriend and I drove cross-country And in all of the major cities that we stopped, I would make him go to all of the bookstores over these years, because it was like, you know, I'd talk to all of these people on the phone so much, but I'd never set foot in them. And it was kind of like a pilgrimage almost.
Now, the two that I'm most familiar with, of course, are Prairie Lights in Iowa City.
Oh, right. They're fantastic.
Yeah. And they do...
world of them.
Yeah. And the other one that I've spent some time at is Book People in Austin.
Oh, yes. I can't believe I didn't mention both of those. They're really, really great.
Okay. Tell me this. Does it ever happen that one of your books, you have trouble placing it, you know, in somewhere, but then it takes off? Mm-hmm. For some reason. And so then those venues call you. Does that ever happen?
Oh, once in a while we get that call, and it's just always so exciting to be on the other end of it.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yes or no. I mean, we always say yes, but it's nice to be in that position for sure.
What are some of, like, are there sometimes unusual reasons why a book will hit that you can think of?
There are, you know, people will get interested. People will sometimes, I'll try to pitch stories that are not directly tied to the main theme of the book, but sometimes there'll be a sidebar in a chapter, but I think, oh, you know, this seems like something that people might want to write about. So then I'll try to get a story based on that, but then people will get really excited based on this, you know, small concept that doesn't really, it's related to the main theme of the book, but it's really not what the book's about.
Mm-hmm.
That'll happen. We had recently an iPhone app. The book was called, this is actually the book that my hand was on, and there's a swear word in the title, so I'm not going to say it,
okay.
But basically it was called Are All Guys Jerks?
Okay.
But jerks was replaced by kind of a
right.
Dirtier word. And okay. The author came up with an iPhone app that basically, is your guy a jerk? And so the way that it works is that, you know, you put in, you say, what's your boyfriend's name, or what's your guy's name, and asks you all of these questions about your relationship with him, like, does he take you out to dinner, does he try to meet your friends, and things like that. And at the end, it says, all right, there is a 10% chance that your man is a jerk. And so that was so fun that we ended up getting a lot of coverage based on that helps the book.
I bet.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I could figure that one out myself.
Yeah, I think it's designed for people that are kind of in the newer stages.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. For the warning signs.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The red
flag. I can see that.
Oh, that's cute. So that's a very kind of unique way to publicize a book.
Yeah, it's, and we're trying to do more with the apps. We just did actually a Julia Cameron-themed app we just launched this week. It's called The Artist's Way Toolkit, The Artist's Way being Julia's biggest book.
Right.
And this is kind of not just an app but an online platform for fans of Julia or people who are just writing enthusiasts to utilize it, and you get your writing, you know, it helps, gives you tools for writing, and it gives you motivations from Julia, and it's a really interesting interactive tool.
Oh, I bet. I bet that sounds like a great one.
Yeah, so it's all kind of new for us. We've been working really hard on it, so hopefully it will be a success. I think so. You know, many of Julia's fans are very interested in writing themselves, so I think that.
Oh, I believe it would. Do you have, Molly, do you have like any advice for somebody who's just starting out as a writer, or has a book that's just coming out? Do you have any advice to give?
Yes, I do. Well, I mean, as we talked about earlier, certainly the advice of building up a platform and just making yourself as well-known as possible prior to the book going on sale is just incredibly beneficial. And really, though, the biggest advice, and this goes throughout all of the different stages of the process, is just to be persistent and to not let a few rejections get you down. I mean, it's hard, and there's just so much competition, but, you know, if something is really a good idea or there's something really there, it will eventually get noticed. I mean, I know they say that The Help, which is now, you know, this massive bestseller and this huge movie with all these Oscar nominations, was rejected by tons of different publishing houses before finally someone picked it up. So,
wow.
Happened.
I know that, you know, we've had many stories like that, like the Chicken Soup for the Soul book.
Right.
Oh,
yeah, yeah,
oh gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But it's hard to believe that The Help, you know, because it's such a wonderful book, it's such a good read, it's hard to imagine that anybody would have turned it down.
Right, but I guess, you know, I don't know what they were thinking, because I think it was a great book, too. But
yeah, yeah.
I don't know. You can never really tell. So eventually someone did see it, and they did see the potential in it, and now it's this huge phenomenon. So I guess it's just really easy to get disappointed, but I think that people should just keep trying.
Now, we were talking a little bit, we only have a couple of minutes, and there was something early on where we were talking about sort of the timelines and once you get involved and you have 3 to 5 active books, how long does that active phase last?
It depends, and certainly if a book is still getting really talked about and getting a lot of attention after several months, we'll still go with it. But I guess if I had to give a rule of thumb estimate, I'd say 3 to 5 months, but it really varies.
Right.
And if something is not quite in that active phase, but we see a great opportunity for it after that phase has ended, we'll still pursue that. I mean, I know a lot of authors kind of fear that we're going to abandon them, and I try my hardest not to do that to anyone.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, it's hard because you're getting those new books in, but...
Oh, yeah.
Right, absolutely.
So then after a certain point, you accumulate a lot of, you know, authors in your backlist, but they're all important.
Well, Molly, we've really enjoyed having you on Writers' Voices today. I've learned a lot, and I hope our listeners
yes.
have too. And, you know, we appreciate what you do for books and for our authors. And thank you so much for being on Writers' Voices.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And that was Molly Briette from Tartra Penguin. And Caroline, do you have some closing words for us?
I do. Do we have anything we need to talk about that's coming up?
Well, there's the film festival tonight at Art Walk.
Uh-huh.
And next, James Moore is up on Planet Earth's Wild next. And
okay.
Unless you're listening Monday morning.
Yeah.
And if you are, have a great week.
Well, I don't know who said this, but I think it's good. Let people know what you stand for and what you won't stand for.
And see you next week on Writer's Voices. We have guest host Cheryl Fisco Johnson next week interviewing the author of the Blue Zone project, which is something that Fairfield is getting involved with.
Mm-hmm.
So. Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fisco Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom. Archives are available at KRUUFM.com. and writersvoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.